All right, Doug, I think we get the ugly stuff out of the way early, and then we'll go to the fun stuff. Does that work for you?
Oh, man, how ugly is it going to get?
Well, I mean, we gotta talk about it. It's the elephant in the room. So the report that it was an internal investigation that took place in Ohio State that came back and said that Dr. Richard Strauss had been doing absolutely horrific things to athletes at Ohio State University for over 30 years. What is the feel down in Columbus about this, Doug?
I mean, it's awful. It's awful. And I mean, it's a little weird because it's old, and then it makes you say, like, how could nobody do anything about this for so long? That, you know, the guy who perpetrated this stuff has been dead for 14 years. The people who were in charge at Ohio State while this happened are gone. So I think there is part of it that's like everybody agrees that it's unbelievably terrible, but there's sort of a hollow feeling of like, well, but the people who did it, the perpetrator himself and then the people who allowed it, sort of are never going to really have a reckoning about it because it's so old. And so the result is that, you know, you hold Ohio State responsible, right? And there is a lawsuit from the survivors that they are suing Ohio State. That's gone to mediation, and Ohio State sort of pushing back against that. And so it's like Ohio State did this, but Ohio State's not a person. That's people did this. People allowed this to happen. So I think there is some frustration that, you know, when you look at the Michigan State thing and Larry Nassar, again, who abused Olympic gymnasts and Michigan State athletes for years and years and years. That was terrible that they allowed that to happen. But at least they got to Larry Nassar while he was still alive so he can be punished. They had administrators at Michigan State who allowed this, who then lost their jobs over this. There was some sort of reckoning for the people who failed, and that's just not going to happen at Ohio State.
And that's kind of the feel that seems like it's coming out of it, Doug, is – I mean, what do you do with this? This is stuff that happened 30, you know, 20, 10 years ago, and everybody who's involved. I mean, this was the big question at dinner, too, is what do you do? Because everybody who's involved is no longer involved anymore. And so is there any kind of punishment or anything like that that's going to come out of this? Or is it just going to kind of be, look, a lot of unfortunate, horrific things took place, and we can only now do what we can to make sure this never, ever happens again?
And I'm not a lawyer. My expectation would be that the victims of the abuse who are involved in the lawsuit will get some financial compensation at some point, one way or another. Ohio State usually is willing to pay to deal with things like this. So whether it goes through full mediation or whether there's some sort of settlement, you know, Ohio State has a ton of money. So I imagine something will come of that. But beyond that, you know, in terms of, will people not want to go to Ohio State? Will athletes not want to be recruited by Ohio State? I don't know that it has any real-world implications for right now for anybody involved with Ohio State like that. So I think you can't compensate people who suffered and weren't listened to. I mean, how do you get that back? But financial compensation is there. But other than that, you know, you hope things are put in place so that it doesn't happen again. But again, the Nassar stuff just happened at Michigan State, was happening 3 years ago, 4 years ago, it was still going on, and nobody did anything. So we can't also say, well, at least it'll never happen again. It's probably happening somewhere right now where somebody in power is abusing athletes, either at the collegiate level or at the club sport level or something. And I hope somebody listens to those athletes when they say something's going on, because clearly at Ohio State for decades, nobody listened.
He is Doug Lemarius of Cleveland.com and a Plain Dealer. All right, let's smile. Let's have some fun. We ate our vegetables. We can move on from here. All right. What do you think? You wrote an awesome piece in Cleveland.com about John Beilein. What do you think of the hire of John Beilein, and what do you think he'll do for the Cavs?
Yeah, so I understand there's always trepidation sometimes with college coaches going to the NBA or the NFL, but I'm always more worried about college coaches who won in college because they recruited the best players, right? Even like Nick Saban didn't really get it done in the NFL. And he's obviously a genius when it comes to X's and O's. But at LSU, and now especially at Alabama, he has the best players. So John Beilein at Michigan never had the best players. And I know sort of like after the fact, Jalen Rose and some other people now are sort of saying like, hey, John Beilein didn't recruit that great at Michigan. And it's like, yeah, you're right. But he also made two national title games not recruiting that great. So I think it's funny sometimes people get like, aren't we based on results? Like, are you arguing against Michigan basketball because they didn't have enough five-star recruits while he was there, but they won without them. So isn't that the point, to win? So for the Cavs' perspective, that's the guy I want. You know, like Brad Stevens didn't have the best players at Butler, but he won anyway. But even to that point, and I wrote this, John Beilein never had a player as good as Gordon Hayward. So I think John Beilein, what he did is maybe even better than what Brad Stevens did. So I like it. He's an X and O's coach. He makes guys better. I think he's good for a young Cavs team, and I like every part of it.
And it blows me away, too, that you hear all these Michigan guys come out and saying, like, well, he could have recruited better. He could have done this. By the way, Jalen Rose is the one who got paid while he was part of the Fab Four in college. So, and here you have this coach who is, like, openly known. Like, this guy never in his life was, like, the one guy we could continue to point to and say, this guy wasn't paying players. This guy was not paying players. He is too straight up for that. He will not deal with that. Plus, he came in with Michigan, has sanctions. I'm with you. This hire rocks. I'm in. The only thing that scares me is his age, Doug. His age is the only thing that scares me.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I think we have to, like, sort of reevaluate how we look at age, because, like, we may end up with the presidential election between two people in their 70s. So it's like a guy who's 66 can't coach an NBA team. You know, like people are just doing things later into life now. And so I think there was a time when it was like, oh man, you know, 66. I mean, that guy's going to be walking around with a cane. And it's like, no, he's not. John Beilein's healthier than I am. I'm in my 40s. I know he had a heart issue a couple years ago, but I think there's a perception that gets stuck in our head that I think that will be fine. I do want to add one thing in here, though. There has been a lot of stuff written about, like, that John Beilein. If John Beilein's leaving college basketball for the NBA, the old professor who did it right, if he doesn't stay in college basketball is dead. What? It's a little overdone. I get it. He's nice. He does it the right way. I get it. Like, it's not the end of the world for college basketball that John Beilein left. So I think we have gone too far a little bit off the deep end there. Good hire for the Cavs, not the end of NCAA basketball.
All right, so then I'm with you there, too, because everybody is writing their pieces. I mean, we've seen it everywhere of just people drooling over John Beilein. Oh, he's the cleanest coach. He's the best.
Basketball. What are we going to do? You're going to hire somebody else at Michigan. It's going to be good. It's fine.
Exactly. They'll figure it out, man. They'll figure it out.
What?
So.
Okay. Sorry. Most of what I get mad about is reacting to the way the other media reacts to something. So it just drives me nuts sometimes. It's overwrought. People get overwrought because, like, he's good with the media and stuff. It's nothing against him. It's just, like, some of the coverage of this has driven me nuts.
With you. It is. It really is. Every writer is writing their John Beilein drooling over him piece. And it's kind of like, okay, these are nice. There's a lot of great anecdotes and that stuff. But they'll find somebody else. Don't worry. So,
yeah, it's fine.
Cavs get the fifth pick in the draft. What do you think? Have we, Doug, solved tanking? Have we finally done it? Are teams no longer going to lose on purpose?
You know what? I think Chris Fedor brought this up, and I think I hadn't thought of it this way, but then I've seen other people bring it up too. I think, like, you solved one part of it, but now you ruin the other part of it. Like, in the end, it's like the Lakers, should the Lakers have gone for, like, the last playoff spot or thrown themselves into the lottery? Because, hey, what could happen? Like, what would have been better for the Lakers? Make the 8th seed and get swept by the Warriors in the first round? Or go into the lottery and have a shot at getting in the top four? So, like, I think maybe you'd solved it for, like, the bottom, but I think you may have entered a world where teams who maybe would fight for the 7th or 8th seed in the playoffs might be less inclined to do so, because all of a sudden now you have a pretty decent shot of getting a good spot in the lottery. So I don't know. Like, I get that people hate tanking, but I also I think I might hate random luck more than I hate tanking. You know, like that's so much. that so much of your existence as a franchise and the hopes for your future are determined by random luck because you've weighted everything less, I almost think is worse. Because like the Lakers don't deserve, whatever deserve means, but they don't deserve the fourth pick. The Cavs deserve to have a worse pick than the Lakers because they're in a worse spot as a franchise, and that's how we do it in this country in sports. So I kind of don't really like this either.
And the funny thing with it is I look at the Lakers with the fourth pick, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the league, and look, I will be the first to say I am somebody who looks at the lottery and with a little skepticism to it and that stuff. And I know everybody you talk to with the lottery says it's clean and all of those different things. But, Dave DeBuscher and the frozen envelope and Patrick Ewing are sitting in my head somewhere. So it feels like you handed the Lakers the pick that, like, let's say something weird happens. Somebody's now going to overpay because you know LeBron's not going to play with whoever's taking fourth overall, dog. Like, there's no way that's going to happen.
Right. No, you're right, and it is. It's like it's even not that they're going to get a player; they just get an asset all of a sudden to do what they were going to do anyway, that they sort of didn't deserve. So I don't know, and I know people have sort of brought up like, oh, what if the NFL did this? I just would ask people, what if the Browns had gone 0-16, and then they had a lottery and they wound up with the fifth pick or the third pick, and it was like, well, you're not going to get. You did this thing. Okay, people hate tanking, but the Browns adopted a strategy that they planned for it to end with the chance to get a franchise quarterback, and then it's like, oh, the ping pong balls went the wrong way. The Jags get the number one pick now. Like, people in Cleveland, you think about the Knicks right now, people in Cleveland would have been crushed.
Oh, it would have been torches and pitchforks.
At the number one pick. And is that right? I don't know. Like, oh, well, you stunk. Sorry, the ping pong balls went the wrong way. The Jags get your quarterback. I don't know that that makes sense.
It would have been torches and pitchforks, man. I mean, it would have. It would have been riots. I mean, it would have been insanity. And I think you're right. So, all right. So you are the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Who are you taking at five? Who's the guy that's sitting in, assuming that, you know, Zion goes one, John Morant is two, RJ Barrett is three, and the Lakers trade out of four?
Yeah, I really don't know. We have such good beat writers at Cleveland.com. I lean on them so hard. So I know that Chris Fedor has theorized it could be DeAndre Hunter. I know he's also reported that they really like Cam Reddish, you know, from Duke. I mean, Reddish makes me a little nervous just because it's like that's based on talent and upside, and even though he didn't really show it at Duke this year. I think Hunter and Jarrett Culver could be interesting. I know Jarrett Culver, people are sort of making comparisons to like, maybe like a Paul Pierce or a Paul George or like a wing guy, maybe somebody who can defend a little bit but also improve as a scorer. So I'll trust the Cavs. I think I like Kobe Altman. Like, I'll trust them to make a good decision. But it is, you know, I know you take best available, but I also think it's reasonable to think like, well, how would this guy go with Colin Sexton? You know, so I think I'd be okay with Hunter or Culver. I'd be a little worried about Reddish, I guess, but if that's what the Cavs do, I'm not going to shake my fist in the air. So, it's not the obvious guy, but I think, you know, I don't think fans should be depressed. I think they have a chance to get a guy who's going to help this team for a long time.
That's the exact way that I feel is, look, we were all hoping and praying for that. The ping pong balls were going to fall the right way and that Zion Williamson were going to be wearing wine and gold. And let's face it, it just didn't happen. That's just not the way it goes. And they fell a little lower than they thought because of it. And, you know, this is just the way that it is. So you look at a Jarrett Culver, you look at a, you know, and I watch some college basketball. I don't watch a boatload, but like you look at a DeAndre Hunter, Jarrett Culver, and find the guy that is going to help you more. But speaking of that, so DeAndre Hunter is a guy who has won a title at Virginia, and the NCAA is now toying around with this idea of maybe allowing a guy who's won a title at Virginia to maybe sign some autographs and make some money off the side of it. Do you like this idea, or is this something that is just hot air from the NCAA?
No, I'm actually finishing a story on that right now. Like this is definitely going to happen. I mean, that's my opinion, but it's based on conversations. And the NCAA doesn't want schools to pay players. That's what they're really, really, really holding out against, because that changes the whole model, because that's money that they're now using to prop up a bunch of other athletic programs. It's money they're using to pay coaches or whatever. That changes their model if now – the schools themselves are paying basketball players and football players. So they are going to allow other people to pay them, right? It's like, oh, well, the amateurism model is changing, but it's like at least it's not our money. So they're going to allow a world where players can get money from jersey sales, where the video games are going to come back and players are going to get money out of that, where you can sign autographs and get money. And stuff like people keep talking about image and likeness and image and likeness and what that means. You know how, like, people like Cavs players and Indians players like do commercials for local businesses, right?
Right.
It's going to be that, right? Chase Young, Ohio State defensive end Chase Young, is going to do a tire commercial for a local auto body shop in Columbus. And some big offensive lineman is going to do a commercial for a wings plate. Like, you're just going to be allowed to do those things and get paid on the outside that pro athletes do right now. And if you're more popular and you're better at your sport, you get more money. Sorry, they're not going to try to keep everything equal. But that's going to be a way to move it incrementally, but still for colleges to hold off on them paying guys, which is the thing they really want to avoid.
I have one request if the NCAA puts this through, Doug. I only have one.
Video game?
Make them bad. Make them horrible commercials. I want
I want
the Timofey Mozgov at the bar looking horrible. I want the bad pizza shop ones. I want the scotch and sirloin one from the 86 Celtics. I want them to be horrible commercials.
Well, I this is before my time covering Ohio State, but I think John Cooper did a hot tub commercial one time.
I got to find this.
That got people all fired up. So it's like, if John Cooper can do a hot tub commercial, why can't Justin Fields do a hot tub commercial? So, like, I think that's the world that we're going to enter.
Doug, I always appreciate time. Thank you so much for joining me. This is fantastic, man. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Take it easy. He is Doug LaMaurice of Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. He is a great friend of the program. He is as good as they come.